I offered him one of the powdered packets from the tray, and was relieved that he peeled off the glove and dropped it into a waste can marked with a red biohazard sticker. He took the packet, tore it open, and dumped it into the cup. I took a sip of my coffee. Yellowstone County has dropped the coroner system? Yes. The king is dead. Long live the king. Both puns intended? He looked at my blank face and continued. He's dead. I did the autopsy on Eddie Cole. It's how I got the job.
How'd he die?
He took a sip of his coffee. Suicide. He had an old Cadillac in his garage, just climbed in, started her up, and took a nap. He left a note.
What did it say? I had to ask.
When you perform the intermastoid incision, make sure the front quadrant is large enough for the frontal craniotomy. Most beginners make a hash of the thing.
Professional to the last.
I nodded toward the operating room. What have we got in there? He lowered his cup. Caucasian, female, approximately mid to late 70s, lifelong smoker, and the scars. I've just finished the thoracic abdominal incision, exposed the pericardial sac, and took a blood sample.
Excuse me, but did you say scars?
The ones on her back.
He looked at me as if it were something I should have known.
A mass of scar tissue. It looks as though they were administered over a period of time.
I unconsciously stiffened.
Administered?
Bill nodded again.
Someone routinely beat the woman at some point in her life.
He looked at his coffee and swirled the tan liquid in the cup. Probably with a belt, whip, or riding crop, something of that sort.
I was a little shaken with that revelation. What else?
Slight discoloration of the tissues and blood, but the type is what's interesting. Was she Basque?
I nodded.
We have a pretty large population from the turn of the last century, sheep herders mostly. I thought so. The blood type, O, with an Rh negative factor. Extremely rare, but 27% of Basques have it.
Cause of death?
I haven't really gotten that far, but I'm betting that it's a standard myocardial infarction or cerebral vascular situation.
That simple.
The numbers don't lie. Out of 500,000 cases of sudden death each year, 300,000 are cardiac arrests following heart attacks. Considering her age, use of tobacco, genetic predisposition, he thought for a moment. Well, I'm far from being finished, and who knows what else we might find before the day is done. I like to do a thorough job. He finished his coffee and dropped the cup into the biohazard container with the gloves. I agreed with his diagnosis and tossed mine in, too. When I got out to the truck, there was another inch of snow, but there were a few streaks of sunshine. I gave the sky my darkest warning look to try and help out the little patches of blue, but was only rewarded with a big fat flake in the eye. I climbed in and radioed Ruby.
What number, Fetterman, is Isaac Bloomfield's office?
I waited as she looked up the number. Static. 431.
Thanks.
Ruby hated using the radio. But I had told all of them I would only get a cell phone if they let me have a computer. So far, we were at a stalemate. The plows were out, and I watched the blinking yellow lights as I passed. The route up to the mountains looked clear, and I hoped that nobody would take it as an invitation. The day hadn't been as bad as I had thought it would be, so far. I started thinking about Katie, the fact that she was going to be here this weekend, and that, so far, I hadn't gotten her anything for Christmas. She had been difficult to buy for as a child, and the situation hadn't gotten any better as she had blossomed into womanhood. I would have to enlist Ruby's help as a covert operator. Ruby enjoyed being a mole, but we were sadly lacking in haute couture. I wondered if I had any catalogs waiting for me at home. I wondered when I might get home. I wondered if the plastic was holding or if there was snow in the living room. I thought about Marie Baroja, and I navigated to the doctor's office. I thought about who would do that to the woman, who was responsible. The most obvious culprit would be the husband. I didn't even know his name or if he was alive or dead. Her personal physician was a good place to start, though. I had seen Doc Bloomfield at the hospital a couple of weeks ago when he had given me the final checkup after my adventures on the mountain,
but I hadn't been at his office in a long time. It was on the corner with a convenient parking lot you could approach from both sides. There was a 1971 silver Mercedes 300 SEL parked next to the steps that I knew belonged to the doctor, but there were no other vehicles, so he was probably free to speak to me. It was warm in his waiting room, and I watched the clownfish in the saltwater tank as Isaac brewed us two cups of green tea. I had said no, but he insisted. There was music softly playing, Handel, Suite Number 1 in F, and I believed we were at the Andante. It was one of Dorothy's favorites. Visiting Doc Bloomfield was like visiting your grandfather about 10 years after your grandmother had died, or the cleaning lady had quit.
"How is the knee?"
I watched as his glasses revealed the multiple folds that did their best to hide the glint in his hazel eyes. I took my mug and glanced down at the pale, ghostly green numbers tattooed on the inside of his right arm, where he had rolled up his sleeves.
"Good. How is the shoulder?"
I took a sip, and it tasted like kelp.
"Good."
He continued to examine me.
"Hands look good. How is the ear?"
I turned slightly and took off my hat so that he could see for himself.
"Looks good."
He continued to study me.
"You've grown a beard?"
"Yes."
"I don't like it."
"Nobody does." I broached the subject of Marie Baroja. He seemed genuinely moved by her death, and stared at the faded print of the carpet. I studied the side of his face. His eyes were sharp, with a little too much to contain. A thumb and forefinger came up, pushed the glasses onto his forehead, and pressed into the sockets, rubbing emotion away. His features were strong, and it was like watching a Roman emperor at the fall. I should be so lucky at that age. I waited a respectful amount of time. "Did you know her well, Isaac?" He didn't respond, so I asked again. He didn't move, the fingers still in his eyes.
"She was not a happy woman. I think she had many disappointments in her life."
He took the hand away, readjusted his glasses, and turned to look at me through the imperfect world of the lenses. "Can you give me some idea as to the cause of death?" I waited as his eyes went back to the floor, then to me.
"Walter, do you mind if I ask you a question?"
"No."
"Why are you so interested in this woman's death?"
That set me back. Why shouldn't I be? He actually reached out and patted my knee.
"Even with the beard, you are a very young man."
I was flattered, I think, but still didn't know what to make of his response. What's that supposed to mean?
"She was an old woman who was tired of living."
"Are you telling me that this was a suicide?" His eyes sparked hard for a moment.
"No, that is not what I am telling you."
He withdrew his hand. The skin was transparent, and I watched as the blue and red protruded in the fists at his lap.
"I think she was tired and gave up."
"You knew her pretty well?"
"She was my patient for more than half a century."
I took a sip of the tea out of habit and immediately regretted it. "What can you tell me about the scars?" He looked at me blankly.
"The ones on her back?"
He raised his head and nodded.
"She was involved in an automobile accident a number of years ago."
"An automobile accident?"
"Yes."
"The scars couldn't have been the result of some form of abuse?" He turned and looked at me again, the picture of questioning disbelief.
"What would lead you to think that?"
"The Yellowstone County Medical Examiner." His eyes widened.
"You sent her to Billings?"
"No, he's here. His name is Bill McDermott, and he's over at Memorial."
Walter, it was Mrs. Barogia's express desire that there be nothing done to her remains other than what was legally required. Well, it's gotten a little complicated. Who did you say was doing the autopsy? I sat the tea down on the magazines stacked at the table behind me. New fellow by the name of Bill McDermott. He's a licensed M.E. I waited for a moment. So you and Mrs. Barogia discussed the possibility of her death? He seemed less excitable now. I discuss the possibility with all my patients. I try to be truthful with them, no matter what the circumstance. I leaned in. Isaac, it sounds like you had a lot more responsibilities than that of family practitioner. Is there something you want to say to me? I waited as he took a deep breath and noticed, not for the first time, how small the man was. I lied to you just now.
Yep, I know.
He looked at me again. It's something I'm pretty good at spotting. You realize, of course, that due to the physician-patient privilege, I don't have to tell you anything.
Yes.
We listened as the little pumps bubbled fresh oxygen into the fish tank. Handel joined the minuet. You want to tell me about the scars first? He sighed. Charlie Nurburn, her husband. I nodded and then stopped. I don't know him. He was from the southern part of the county, near Four Brothers. Middle fork of the Powder, not much out there. Used to be a few little homesteads and an old coal mine. I looked at the thick yellow nails as his fingers tightened at his kneecaps. I used to run a clinic down in Powder once a week, Saturday mornings, back in the late 40s, early 50s. I leaned back in the overstuffed chair and unbuttoned my sheepskin coat. She was one of your patients, then?
Yes.
I delivered her two children and...
Three children?
He paused for a moment.
Yes.
I always forget about David. But I didn't deliver him. I wasn't practicing yet. I waited. She didn't come in about the beatings.
What then?
Latent syphilis. I rubbed my hands across my face.
This guy sounds like a real charmer.
How long were they married?
Long enough.
Jesus. I looked at Isaac again. Where is he?
Gone.
It seemed like there was more.
Dead? I'm not sure, just gone.
When?
Years ago.
He waited for a moment, and his eyes stayed steady with mine.
It's probably better that way, don't you think?
I didn't say anything. You can understand my being circumspect concerning her situation.
Yes.
I wondered about all the individuals wandering around out there who were in serious need of the administration of a dreadful ass-kicking and weren't likely to get it. Why the response to the autopsy? I thought she'd been through enough, and it was her expressed wish that her body not be disturbed any more than it already had. She was very religious. It was a sad smile this time. What does Mr. McDermott have to say about cause of death? I waited a moment and looked at Isaac, allowing myself the blurred vision of the living hell that he had endured. Lucian said that he had been one of three survivors of Nordhausen, a subcamp of Dora Mittelbau for inmates too sick or weak to work in the tunnels of Dora. Nordhausen was a Vernichtungslager, or extermination camp, where starvation was the simple but effective measure. To make matters worse, on April 3, 1945... it was bombed by our Air Force. Since it was installed in concrete hangars, we thought it was a German munitions depot. A great number of the prisoners were burned alive. A week and a half later,
when the 104th Infantry Division liberated Nordhausen, they found 3,000 rotting corpses and three survivors. One of them was Isaac Bloomfield, and he weighed 57 pounds. I always thought that there was a reason why the old man was able to keep going. Maybe it was because, as long as he was alive, he was a reminder. Cardiac arrest. Any history of heart problems in the family? He chuckled to himself with a wistful quality. Oh, Walter, there are nothing but problems of the heart in families such as this. He continued to smile. I suppose cardiac complications due to prolonged exposure to syphilitic infection. That, and I believe that Mrs. Baroja took solace in a number of lifelong vices that did nothing to prolong her existence. So there isn't anything suspicious about her death that you can think of.
I don't think so.
He studied me a little longer than I was comfortable with.
Is this disappointing to you?
I wondered how much he knew about Marie Baroja and Lucien, and suspected that it was more than he was willing to admit. No, that's the one odd thing about this job. You're always willing to turn work away. I looked down at my uniform, the badge, and the 45 at my hip. It didn't take much imagination to see the distance that they put between myself and most people, let alone Isaac. Nice people with uniforms, badges, and guns had once told him they were doing things for his own good, his own safety, and his own welfare. Next thing he knew, he was being carried out of a reinforced hangar with 3,000 dead people. If I were Isaac, I wouldn't let me in the same room as me. What do you know about the children?
Everything. Carol, Kay, and David.
I'm assuming David is dead. I thought back to the sad-eyed lieutenant in the photograph in her room. Vietnam?
Yes.
His eyes softened a little. That was your war, wasn't it, Walter? Don't blame me, I didn't start it. I allowed my mind to play over the photograph again. I'm trying to think if I knew him.
He was quiet.
He said it like I wasn't. Marie had a cousin, a priest, I believe. Here in town? He was not a priest here, but I think he retired here, if he's still alive. The priest in the family photograph. This would take a little following up. I thought of the picture of the little dark-haired girls on the stoop. Both of the twins are lawyers?
Yes.
I changed the subject to the only other Baroja I knew who wasn't a lawyer in an attempt to pick up my spirits. I understand that one of the grandchildren has a bakery here in town.
Yes, Lana was David's daughter. She is the only grandchild. The twins both have had miscarriages, probably as a result of the hereditary syphilitic condition.
It took a while, but his face brightened.
The bakery is a wonderful place. Have you been there?
No, but I'm going there next. I patted my stomach. I'll take a baker over a lawyer any day of the week.
You must try the Ruggelach. It is the best I have ever tasted.
As we were leaving, I asked him if he would go by and formally identify Marie Baroja to save the family the grief. He said that he would, and I asked him if he wanted to turn the music off. All he did was lock the door behind us and ask, why? I watched as the silver Mercedes without snow tires made its way up Fetterman, taking a right on Aspen, and thought about a man who had escaped the concentration camps and now drove a German car. The Hun be damned. I thought the snow had stopped, but it had just satisfied itself with a finer version of delivery. If I squinted my eyes and looked away from the breeze, I could still see the clandestine little flakes ganging up on me. Okay, so where's this damned bakery?
Static. You're supposed to say, base, this is Unit 1. Where is this damned bakery? Over.
It had taken forever to get her to use proper radio procedure, and now I wasn't sure I was happy with the results.
It's still snowing, and I haven't bought my soon-to-arrive daughter anything for Christmas. Have you listened to the weather?
Static. More snow. Over.
Wonderful. Any ideas about Katie?
Static. I'll work on it, and the bakery is next to the small motor repair place next to the creek. Over.
Unit 1 to base. Thank you. Over.
Static. That's much better.
The bakery was on the back street, as Ruby had described, next to Evans's chainsaw service, something I was going to need if I ever got my wood-burning stove into operation. The building had been a gift store that had been boarded up for a couple of years. She had pulled off all the old plywood and replaced it with new wood that sported a jaunty red with gold trim. A hand-painted sign hung over the entrance between the two bay windows, extolling, in a florid script, Barroja's baked goods, as simple as that. Baskets of baguettes and fresh loaves spilled out of carefully arranged displays along with bottles of wine and full-pound wedges of exotic cheese. I stood there on the sidewalk and looked up the street to the Durant Currents sign just to convince myself that I was still in the county seat. How could I have missed something like this? I climbed up the steps and pushed the beveled glass door open to the soft tinkling of the attached bell, and was immediately assaulted by the smell of vanilla. I pulled my pocket watch out and consulted it as to lunchtime. We concurred that it was early, but acceptable. I looked around, but there wasn't anyone to be found. I had seen places like this in Denver, Santa Fe, and Salt Lake City, old buildings that had been partially restored but left with a rustic appeal. The red brick walls were exposed on the inside, and the pressed tin ceiling glowed a fiery copper. The floors had been sanded to the original planks, and their distressed quality was preserved in industrial-grade polyurethane. There were shelves along the left side of the narrow building that were loaded with all sorts of gourmet goods in assorted bottles and boxes. The counter level had small wicker baskets filled with recognizable Basque-baked goods that ran the gamut from black olive bread to Norman loaves. There was a large white porcelain display cooler that held all kinds of cheeses and complicated charcuterie. There were French posters on the walls, lithographs of what I assumed were advertisements for 19th-century liqueurs, and an old wooden display case that held a surprising number of antique corkscrews and wine accoutrements. In the back were two country French tables surrounded by time-worn, mismatched chairs, and an upright cooler that held rows of wines and beers that I had never seen before. My attention was drawn to a collection of dark gallon jugs at the bottom. I kneeled down and inspected one of the labels. It read, "Unpasteurized beer from the sparkling gem of the high plains, Wheatland Mercantile, Wheatland, Wyoming." There was a jackalope wearing a tuxedo and a monocle on the label. You have got to be kidding. I listened as footsteps approached from the stairwell that I assumed led to the basement. I stood and turned toward the doorway as Lana Barroja appeared, covered in a fine patina of sweat and flour. She still wore her snow boots, but the purple quilted long coat had been replaced with an apron full of doughy handprints, and her hair was now in a French twist. I was getting the feeling that Lana, with her flushed face and darting eyes, was a character in search of a French author. The eyes lost their spark when she recognized me. "I find it very hard to believe that you have a micro-brew from Wheatland." She placed a fist on her hip and cocked her head. "You'd be surprised at what all I've got in here." She walked past me and behind the counter. "I'm the best-kept secret in Durant. Not that it's doing my bank account any good." She straightened her arms and leaned against the counter. "I assume you're here because you have some news for me?" I looked at the cases and tried to spy the item that Isaac had recommended. "Arugula?"
"Excuse me?"
My courage was fleeting. "Something like arugula?" She continued to stare at me as if I were an idiot. "Dr. Bloomfield's favorite?" She looked at me through a finely arched black eyebrow and very long lashes.
Ragalach, a traditional Hanukkah pastry, crescent-shaped, filled, and made with a cream cheese dough?
That would be it.
As opposed to arugula or rocket, an aromatic salad green with a peppery mustard flavor?
I'll take both. I only have the pastry. I'll take that, then. She smiled and wagged her head. She was enjoying herself. Most people did when it was at the sheriff's expense.
You're sure?
Anything but. As she slid back the door of the glass case and extracted a plate of the delicate pastries, I reassessed my thinking about Lana Barogia. There was something old-world about her, a practical quality that superseded the popular beauty of the day and drew its warmth from the earth rather than the air. She turned back around from the opposite counter and placed a small waxed bag in front of me. I looked at it.
It's a gift.
For what?
Caring about my grandmother.
I nodded. Thank you. I studied the little sack and thought about Marie Barogia. Did she bake?
Yes.
She looked at the little white bag, and it was obvious to both of us that it was symbolic of something important and tactile that was being passed between us. It was a contract.
Whenever we visited from Colorado Springs, she would bake things with me.
The dark eyes came up.
I guess that's how I got started.
Your father was at the academy? She brought her palms up from the counter.
Air Force.
He died in Vietnam?
Yes. I didn't get much of a chance to know him. Did you?
I thought of the sad-eyed young man. No, but I know a guy a lot like him. How about your mother?
She stared at me for a second. She's still in Colorado Springs. Little Shih Tzu and Jesus.
I nodded. I see.
What did Dr. Bloomfield say?
I leaned a hip of my own against the counter. He said that your grandmother had heart complications due to a chronic condition, and the medical examiner from Billings seems to concur with the prognosis so far.
So far?
I started for the door. Things had gone so well, I didn't want to spoil them. We should have a death certificate by the end of the day.
It really isn't fair, you know?
I stopped with my hand resting on the brass handle. She still leaned against the counter with her arms folded, staring at the worn surface.
Just when you get to the point where you can enjoy them, they're gone.
I thought about it. It's that way sometimes with children, too. She continued to stare at the wood and extended a finger to trace the grain.
I wouldn't know.
I paused for a moment more. On the subject of family, what can you tell me about your grandfather?
The finger stopped. He was a prick, and he's dead.
I was relieved, but tried to hide it. He's dead? Do you know how he died? The dark eyes looked straight at me and blinked only once.
Surely you know. Lucian Connolly killed him.
Chapter 4. I told the ladies at vehicle registration to punch up Charlie Nerburn on the DMV computer and show me what they had, or I was going to set fire to the place. It didn't take long for them to tell me zip, so I asked them how far back the data went. They asked me how far back I wanted to go. The ladies at vehicle registration were like that. After all the years of abuse at the hands of the local citizenry, they had developed the finely honed tact and manners of Russian wolfhounds. I asked for the 40s, and they came forth grudgingly with nothing. I asked for the 50s, and they eventually showed me that Charlie had registered a 1950 Kaiser, but had failed to pay taxes or registration a year later. He had also failed to have his driver's license renewed. There were no further records to date. I asked them what a Kaiser looked like. They said it looked a lot like a Fraser. I asked them what a Fraser looked like. They said it looked like a Hudson. Before I left, I reminded them about the fire. They asked me when the fire was going to start so they could be sure to call the county commissioners and get them in the courthouse for a meeting. I told them I was going across the hall to the county clerk's office. They said that was a good place to start a fire, that there was enough blue hair over there to burn down the whole damn county. I walked across the hall and once again put forth the human query of Charlie Nurburn. Wyoming has no income tax, so I asked for anything the ladies there might have concerning Charlie's birth, life, marriage, children, or death, not necessarily in that order. They were nicer than the ladies over in vehicle registration, and came back with more. There were three birth certificates for his children, David in 47, and the twins in 48. A death certificate for the sad-eyed young lieutenant, circa 1972, and a marriage certificate dated 1946. Nothing else. No death certificate for Charlie Nurburn. So I copied down his social security number and warned them about the impending fire. They didn't seem to care either way. I walked down the hall past the stairs that led to the courtroom above, but got corralled by Vern Selby. He wanted to talk about the outstanding warrants we had on people who had neglected to show up for jury duty, which told me that we might not have reached our quorum for the afternoon. He leaned an elbow on the newel post, like Clifton Webb in repose, and twisted the end of his mustache. It was officially winter because the judge had grown his matinee idol lip warmer. He didn't seem pleased. "We only had 7 jurors today." "Maybe you need to get more entertainment values involved. You know, bang the gavel more." He studied me a while longer. "I knew you were the wrong person to talk to about such things." I shrugged and headed for the assessor's office, but stopped after a step. "Vern, do you remember a Charlie Nurburn from the southern part of the county, married to Marie Baroja?" I was saving the lawyers as a final connection. "Related to Kay Baroja Lofton over in Sheridan and Carol Baroja Calloway in Miami?" I should have known. I noticed he didn't mention Lana. Her not being a lawyer probably dropped her down to the level of the rest of us mere mortals. "He was the father of those two and another one. David Nurburn?" "Yes." So, Lana's father had kept his father's name, but she hadn't. Interesting. "I believe he was about the same age as my William, and you, come to think of it." The judge contemplated.